Welcome to your Personal Growth, Personal Brand podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Biernan. I interview grow-getters just like you who overcome adversity, thirst for progress, and have a powerful message to share. You'll see how personal growth means getting a handle on your past and why your personal brand is the key to your future. What's going on, grow-getters? Today, I am joined by Marvin Dietz. He's an author, entrepreneur, and international adjunct professor of mystery. Marvin, welcome to the show.
Awesome, Andrew. It is great to be here. As always, I missed you. We had such a great time the last podcast, and I'm just over the moon. I've been wanting to use that line, over the moon, to be here with you.
I love it. So those who maybe missed our first conversation together, Marvin was one of my, I think probably one of my first 20 guests I ever had on the show. And he's now a boomerang, come back around again. And a couple of things we want to dive into today so you guys can kind of come along for the ride with us. We want to talk a little bit about his book that he published. Also want to talk about mental health, talk a little bit about alcohol and how that all kind of, how that all mixes together and many other offshoots that we come up with as we get into our discussion today. I think a great starting point though is talking about the book, because the book kind of, at the very least, touches heavily on the mental health aspect, but writing a book in itself is a journey. So let's start with the journey. Talk to me about your book and your process and how that went.
Well, I tell you, it's probably been about an 18-year process. So really nice and short, Andrew.
Yeah, nice and tight. Yep.
No, it actually started about 18 years ago as I started journaling my journey of therapy as an adult. And that truly transformed my life. And I just wanted to, you know, pass on what I've learned and how it impacted me to young adults so they could take advantage of what I learned as an adult and maybe, you know, get some help and see a therapist at a younger age. But it's been an 18-year process, but I'm here. And once I really got started and said, you know what, I want to do it. I want to get this done. I want to get this out there. Things happen very, very quickly. And I got to be honest with you, you inspired me as well. You're an author as well. And, you know, you and I had a conversation a few years ago. I was kind of stuck and that helped me get unstuck. And there's a lot of great resources out there for anybody that wants to write a book. And I utilize those resources, whether it was on Fiverr, a ghostwriter, a friend of mine's daughter who helped me write this book and bring it to life. But that's kind of the quick synopsis of this journey. But it's been an awesome one. And I'm just so excited to get it out there and tell my story and inspire it.
I love it. Now, one thing is really special about this book is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more fictionally grounded. It's got some kind of fantastic stuff going on in it. Walk me through some of that and kind of the decision making behind that and how it played out in the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nonfiction and fiction together, melded together. So I'll just give you the quick synopsis. You know, I as I mentioned, I transformed my life as an adult. Probably in my late 20s with therapy and a magical ambulance, believe it or not, that combination. And I had a very troubled upbringing, lousy high school like a bunch of us do, and bullied and bad grades and struggled with women and finally got some help in my 20s and started seeing a therapist who I actually had a crush on. I will admit that. Hopefully she's not listening because now she'll know. not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm happily married. And honestly, it truly transformed my life. And as an adult, I also bought this magical amulet at a farmer's market that while I was going through this transformation as an adult, that I really thought had magical powers, that I could do anything. And I was in the midst of just gaining all this incredible confidence and momentum. And as I was doing that, as I started getting older and really living a happier life, I always wondered what it would be like if I could go back in time and relive the exact high school years and the lousy upbringing that I had, face all the same demons and things I faced in high school, but now with the same combination of my therapist as an adult and also this magical amulet that I acquired. Would it change those events and would it change where I became? And I got a chance to kind of rewrite history, and I did have a near-death experience that kind of brought me back. And I had these vivid dreams of going back in the time. So there is some, you know, truth to going back in the time and some of the things that came out of the book. But also, I took the liberty of kind of massaging kind of what would have happened now that I had these internal superpowers that I gained as an adult, but now as a troubled teen, and what would happen. And the book shows you in real time everything unfolding, and then kind of brings you back to where I'm at now. So without giving too much away, I'll stop there. Yeah, I would say the majority of the book is true. And I would even say the time travel. I still don't know if it was time travel or dream or what, Andrew. I'm just being honest with you.
Okay? Right.
I know. I see you laughing and thinking, oh, this guy's crazy.
I love it, man.
I might be.
Well, and I think it's really interesting, right? Because it's a common theme as a grown up, we're like, man, I want to go back and relive those glory years or the years that weren't glorious that I wish were. And, you know, what would I do if I could do it over again? And it's a really interesting concept because, in a sense, we have that opportunity every day. Because at some point, today is going to be the past. I'm going to look back and say, man, if only I'd done it better. Right. And so, you know, we only have forward in a sense, right? We can dream about the past. We can imagine. But if we want to actually change something, we want to actually feel different or experience different, we got ahead. And we got now. That's it, right? And so if we can do now maybe a little bit better, let's focus on that. And I think it's really powerful. And it sounds like for both of our lives, we kind of got into therapy at around the same age. I was in my kind of mid to late 20s when I started getting some help. I'm curious for you, what kicked it off for you? How did you make that surrender moment? Or how did you finally get in front of a therapist or finally have that sit down?
You know what? That's a great question. I remember, you know, I remember just all these voices in my head, all these negative voices I had, this chatter that I had for years. We're getting louder and louder. And finally, I just said enough like that out loud and internally. I got to do something here. And I'd heard about therapy, obviously, through friends and seeing how it's transformed some of the people I knew. And, you know, I just took that plunge. I made the call, you know, set up my first appointment. And I remember, you know, it was almost like losing my virginity was seeing my therapist for the first day. And not knowing what to expect. I thought it was going to be this old, you know, decrepit person that was going to have me lie on the couch and you know, tell them, you know, what was on my mind. And I would be sleeping within a couple of minutes. But it was completely opposite. She happened to be drop dead gorgeous. You know, I had for the first couple of months of therapy, I had a fight trying to impress her. You know, oh, everything's great. I'm this, I'm that. And I found myself bragging to her as I'm going through the therapeutic journey and then realized, wait a minute, I got to stop. But going back to your original question, you know, I think it just came to the point where, you know what, I'm sick and tired of fighting these voices in my head, which I believe are my negative mother, if you really want to go deep. And my mind just kind of was trained to that and just say, you know what, I've got to do something here. It just came to that moment and taking that plunge and making that call was really, really tough. I had to force myself. And I think that's to make a really big change in your life, you've got to push yourself.
100%. I love that. So I was in a different spot. My brother had recommended that I see his counselor. And this guy also did leadership coaching as well. And so he sent me to this guy under the guise of, hey, you know, I want you to improve as a leader so you can better serve the people that are in front of you. And so I worked for my brother at the time. And he's like, hey, go check this guy out. He's going to be awesome. It's okay if I send you. I'm like, sure. Sounds awesome, man. I'm always looking to grow as a leader. And so I show up. Actually, before I even showed up, they sent me this giant packet in the mail. Filled out the packet. As I'm filling it out, you know, I was asking all these really intimate, deep, challenging questions. I put the whole truth, nothing but the truth, put it all out there. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get anywhere if I don't really say what's up. So gave him everything. I get to my first appointment. He's, you know, he'd already looked through my file and he starts our conversation. He's like, hey, so I know you're here for leadership coaching. I think our time would be better served if we transitioned into traditional counseling. I think you'd get a lot more out of our time together. And I was like, sure, man, whatever, you know, whatever you think is best. And then like for the next hour and a half, this guy like laid out my life and I was like, oh man, Things are a lot worse than I thought. I never thought about that. Doing breakthrough after breakthrough, like internet, like a happy breakthrough, like, yay, things are better now.
Right.
It's more like ripping off the Band-Aid or really taking off the blindfold that I'd been wearing. And I see that, you know, my life is a hot little mess. And, you know, for the next couple of weeks before my next appointment with him, I went into like a nice solid depression. Like things were not good. I was like, wow, I can't believe things have gotten this bad. Like, I didn't think I thought I was good. I thought that everything was fine.
Right.
And I'd really been deluding myself. And so to have that illusion destroyed, it was a hard place to be. And I definitely remember it was just a very dark period of time until I started seeing the light again, you know, until I started seeing like, oh, okay, so I'm in the hole. How do I climb out now? Right. How do I get the energy to climb out? I'm kind of curious for you, Marvin. You kind of mentioned that, like, you know, it's hard because, like, you know, thankfully I was not attracted to my counselor, so that was good. But like, you were battling a lot as you were kind of getting into the initial parts of your counseling. What was that like, and what were some of the initial milestones, whether they were good or bad?
Yeah, I mean, it really was tough. I think, as the old cliche goes, things got to get really bad for it to get better. And all of a sudden you start talking about stuff that you never really wanted to talk about. Maybe you knew internally about yourself and what was going on, but you never really wanted to face it. And it's just like, oh my God. And you're starting to feel things. And I started feeling things like, oh my God, this is tough. This is uncomfortable. And then I found myself after a while getting more and more comfortable talking about things to the point where I actually started enjoying it. And, you know, my book talks about these internal superpowers, and I call these superpowers momentum, and the ability to really have the confidence and really love yourself and start doing things and appreciating yourself that are really positive. And all of a sudden you start gaining more and more momentum, where I was getting to the point where I could do anything. I felt like I could do anything. I was having all these breakthroughs on, wow, I conquered this. I can do that. Wow, I'm actually a smart guy. I think I can go back to school. So, you know, every little step was a milestone, but then it just started all clicking to the point where, wow, I just started getting confidence and feeling good about myself, which I never felt my entire life. And then riding that momentum of therapy and having milestones and getting those superpowers that I could do anything. And I'm maybe jumping ahead as it relates to the process, but at the beginning, it was brutally uncomfortable. And then once again, fighting the crush and, you know, trying to, you know, not look at her. Oh, she's flirting with me. Oh, look, she really likes me. Like, thinking this lady's got the hots for me. Come on. Are you kidding me? That made the story even, you know, interesting too, to overcome that as well, because, you know, I didn't expect to have a crush on my therapist. So
sure. Well, and then I think we could maybe parlay this into something worth exploring is, you know, I remember when I was in my late 20s, you know, it seems like everyone's starting to kind of start settling down, getting married, or they're in long-term relationships. And like, I'm still like the single guy, can't seem to kind of get it together. You know, it seemed like, you know, nothing was really working out as far as the ladies front, right? As far as dating, as far as relationships, like I didn't understand myself. And it was really interesting. A couple of years before I went to counseling, maybe 4 years before that, I was sitting down to brunch with a friend, massively hungover, by the way. And we were just kind of chatting, and he started really getting deep. He started talking about some of the challenges he'd been through in his life, some of the things about his dad, like he just wasn't there for him, and da-da-da-da-da, right? And, you know, he ended kind of his stuff, and I was just like blown away. I was like, wow, that's really powerful. He just shared that. And then he sat there, and he looked at me, you know, and I just looked back. And like there was this like expectation that like I was going to start talking, that I was going to start sharing.
Right.
But like, I didn't have anything to share because I didn't do any reflection. I didn't understand anything that was going on.
Right.
I'd done zero processing. And so like, it was just like this awkward moment of like, this was so powerful what this guy shared. And then like, I had nothing to add to the conversation because I didn't know myself at all. to be able to recognize where my shortcomings were, to be able to recognize where some of the challenges in my past were. And it really got me thinking, you know, now looking back later, is I have that happen to me a lot nowadays, where I'll share deeply on something and someone just kind of gives me that like deer in the headlights look back. And, you know, I really empathize because it means, you know, I remember I was there. It means I hadn't done any of that processing. I hadn't done any of that learning about myself and learning about my past and learning at how it impacts me now. And it's not like I know everything. It's like I'm at least a student now. I'm a learner. You know what I mean? So, and I'm kind of curious for you, like, you know, let's maybe talk dating wise or maybe talk progression wise. How did things go for you through counseling?
Well, you know, before counseling, I used to joke all the time. Like, I was just a massive jokester. And even people would say, Marvin, are you ever...
I was going to say, Marvin, I don't know if that's changed.
Yeah, exactly. I was joking. I was hiding behind my humor because I didn't want to ever open up. I wanted everybody to see me a certain way. I didn't want to be vulnerable. And I think a lot of people put on this facade. And keep in mind, this doesn't... going to counseling or having issues that you're trying to work out doesn't mean you come from a bad family, you got a, you know, messed up life, because we all struggle with this. We all struggle with something in our lives. I don't care how much you think you have it together. I don't care how much you think other people have it together. Oh, wow, they come from a perfect family. There's no way you could have any baggage. You got the perfect parents. I used to think that all the time. Well, a lot of times those people are some of the ones that are most messed up. So I guess what I'm saying is everybody can learn from therapy, can transform, can improve. It doesn't matter, you know, who you are and what your background is. As far as women, I always struggled. I was always second, you know. Mm. I remember, you know, this woman saying, Marvin, I want to talk to you about somebody. There's somebody I want to talk to you about that I really like. Well, I'm thinking she's talking about me. You know, meet me here. It was a camp. Meet me here at 0800 hour and we'll just be you and I. And I'm like, you know, brushing my hair and putting on the cologne. Right? I get there, I sit down. Marvin, I just want to say that I really, really like your friend Josh. And, you know, I'm like, what?
No.
Never really good with girls. But you know what? Once I got those superpowers, Andrew, I'm going to be honest with you. I was a chick magnet. And listen, I'm exaggerating. But, you know, I felt like I can relate to women, express myself, and women loved it. Mm-hmm. And this is part of those, I don't want to keep going back to those inner superpowers, but it is those inner superpowers of feeling confident, feeling at ease with yourself internally, and be able to express yourself. All the things that we're talking about here can help in all areas, and especially when it comes to dating. And I think those are the people that women or men are very attracted to, are the ones that are self-confident, that can express themselves. Although I know a lot of women that like the bad boys. So maybe I'm not 100% right, but.
Sure.
And by the way, I didn't mean to use chick magnet. I'm sorry if there's any chicks out there. No. I hope it didn't offend anyone.
Marvin, put down the shovel, man. You're still digging.
I was going to say, if there's any magnets out there, I apologize.
If there's any magnets out there, I'm sorry to them too.
Attracted, no.
Oh, Marvin. No, you make some really interesting points, though, because, like, you know, I can look back in my time dating and any new experience or new person you're getting to know, you can kind of tell when someone's comfortable with themselves, when someone understands themselves. It's a different conversation. It's a different type of person, and it's easier to relate to them. And it's easier to, in a sense, get into their orbit, right? Whereas people that are guarded or people that are always deflecting, people that are not really self-aware, like it's tougher to actually truly connect with that type of a person. It's tougher to truly make that type of a relationship, in a sense, to make that work.
And I was going to say, I think being therapeutic, you can recognize people immediately and read them immediately. If they are comfortable with themselves, if they've done the work on themselves or not. I mean, it really comes out quickly, especially, you know, having that mindset, having been through it, you know, you're a recognizer, if you will.
Well, let's talk about that. That sounds like an interesting idea. Is I'm trying to think now, how do I know whether someone's done internal work or not? How do I know? Because you're right. I feel like sometimes I could just like right away, like, yeah, you have no idea who you are. You know what I mean? Like you are very, very lost in yourself. So I'm curious for you, what are some of the warning signs, or what are some of the signs that someone doesn't know themselves?
Andrew, I'm going to give you the biggest warning sign that we all come across. And those are the people that are constantly talking about themselves. Mm-hmm. They are focused on themselves. And if somebody starts talking about themselves or some of the things they're going through, they always go back to themselves. And the reason is because they're insecure about themselves. They feel like they have to let people know that they are above them or that they're more knowledgeable or better than them, because they don't have that confidence, inner confidence, to own it and not have to show off all the time. I think that is the biggest red flag as it relates to somebody that hasn't done the work. And then the other one I would say is somebody that's constantly putting other people down. And you know, they might doing joking aroundly or kiddingly, but they always feel like they have to put people down. Once again, it's always putting themselves first, and that's one way of doing that. So I think that is the key warning sign. But
sure.
The key for us, for people, is to understand who you're talking to, what type of personality is they are. And, you know, somewhat talk to them and what appeals to them, what drives them internally. You can start reading people. And I do it, you know, I teach this in my customer centricity class and classifying different personality traits. There's all kinds of concepts that are out there. But understanding the personality you're dealing with in maybe four different traits and realizing what motivates them, what doesn't motivate them, and then understanding why they're who they are. So that probably is another podcast, but
sure.
Yeah.
Well, and that gets me thinking, right? So like one thing I've noticed is you touched on the idea of like putting other people down is one of the things that frustrates me the most typically with people that don't really know themselves as well is they're putting themselves down often.
Right.
Is they're slamming themselves or self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And there's a point where like that's funny and like it's a sign of a strong level of self-awareness. But when it's constant or when every response is putting themselves down, like one of my biggest pet peeves is when I give someone a genuine compliment and they either directly or indirectly shoot down the compliment.
Right.
They're just like, you know, like imagine like, you know, I'm a World War II plane flying above them. Like, hey, I have nice things to say about you. They're just like, bah, 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 right. You know, there's like just trying to gun down that nice thing.
Right.
And it makes me so sad because it's like, oh no, like you tried to push back against that. But that was like, that was something that could have really been nice for you to enjoy.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And I think some of that is I can look back to my time. Because I used to do that, is a lot of it was because they weren't complimenting me. They were complimenting this creation. They were complimenting something fake that I had made. And I had made this fake front-facing thing. And that thing is what people interacted with. Nobody knew me. Nobody understood me.
Right.
They just interacted with this facade. They interacted with this creation. And when the creation got compliments, I dissociated with that. I pushed away from it because it's not actually me. It's just something that you see. And so once you can integrate though, once what people see is what you are, once you're the same, then compliments are really wonderful. They actually land really well. It makes me feel really good. And instead of saying, oh, blah, 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 or, oh, nice shoes. I love those. Oh, thanks. I got them on sale in the garbage. You know, like, okay, like, why'd you have to go there? Just say thank you. You know what I mean? Like, and once I was able to get to that point where like someone gave me a compliment and I was able to just say, thank you. That really means a lot. I appreciate that. And just kind of take that second to stew in a compliment. It changed me, and it changes those people around you too, because they feel good now. They feel good because they made you feel good.
Right.
And when you shoot people's compliments down, you're actually making them kind of feel bad.
Right.
And now you also feel kind of bad at the same time.
Right. And the goal and really life in general is really about bringing people up that are around you. Right. And, you know, giving that example is, you know, make it about other people and give them excitement about life or inspire them, appreciate them, make them feel good. And I think that's one of the things that comes along with having the power that we have, is pay it forward and don't abuse the power, but, you know, try to get other people to get that power as well and feel great about themselves. So
100%. One thing that I'm thinking of too, we had a great discussion the other day when we were catching up. We talked about alcohol. And for me, alcohol was a really foundational piece of my young adulthood. I started, you know, I had my first couple beverages at 18. And, you know, at first it was just kind of like a thing, just kind of came and went, a couple drinks here and there, go to a party, whatever. And eventually, though, I like started to like cling to it. It kind of stuck a little bit when I was a little bit, you know, further into college. And it became something that I thought that I was good at. And it wasn't that I was, you know, great at holding my liquor or my alcohol. I was the opposite. Like I got drunk really fast and really stupid, but I was really good at drinking really fast. That was what I was. I could drink a lot in a short period of time. And then whatever happened after that, who even knows?
Right.
And so you look at as far as skills go, right? Like what a crappy skill to be so proud of and to try and get good at. And that's what I had clung to, though, because I didn't really know myself. I didn't really know what I was good at. And this was something that I found that, oh, you know, this is maybe something that I could be. I could be this guy. And, you know, eventually started using it to suppress feelings in the sense of like, oh, super nervous. I want to go, you know, talk with these new people. I had social anxiety. And I didn't call it that then, but like, oh, I was nervous around girls, nervous around that, you know, and like, well, let's have a couple drinks and I'll be fine. What I found was by the time I had had enough alcohol that I wasn't afraid anymore, I was acting like an idiot and nobody wanted to hang out with me, right? And anybody that knew that met me is like, who's this guy? This guy's insane. And so, you know, it had a very counterproductive effect on what the end result was, which isolated me, made me kind of fall into it even more. And so, you know, Marvin, you've kind of been a part of my journey in the sense of just kind of being an encourager and being a supporter, but you've made some changes in your life around alcohol too. I want to kind of explore some of your journey. So kind of talk me through your process.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, I was always kind of the party animal, the wild one out of all my friends. And I could do the same thing you did and drink fast and do tons of shots and be able to control myself and really be the life of the party. And I took that into adulthood and when I was married and recently having kids, well, 13-year-old. And one of the things that really bothered me as I went through therapy is I realized how bad of an alcoholic my father was. And it really bothered me because he had a drink every night and he drank until he started slurring his words and then kind of fell asleep. And it just really, really bothered me as an adult. And then I would say the pandemic hit and my drinking, social drinking, increased to the point where I was drinking something every night and waking up with a headache every day. And I really said, wait a minute here. First of all, what kind of example am I setting to my son? Number one. Number two is, you know, I really hated my dad for being an alcoholic and for some of the things I used to go through. And here I am really becoming him, maybe to not the extent that he was, but pretty close. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm getting up there in years, and I know it's not healthy to drink every day or drink at all in general. It's started reading some articles, and I wanted to quit for probably the last couple of years. And finally, I just said, just like I did when I started going to therapy, I said, that is it. I'm done. I am not doing this anymore. I've made that commitment inside. I made it to my wife. She came along with me as well, and she quit drinking. And now we're, you know, a couple months into it. I've lost weight. I'm healthier than I ever have been. I don't wake up with that headache anymore, and I feel a sense of accomplishment that I've achieved something to become healthier as a person, spiritually, mentally, physically. And I feel great. And I started taking Taekwondo lessons. What do you think? Pretty good, huh?
Love it, man. You're looking good.
I didn't raise my hand, folks. I know you can't see. Sounded scary. I'm glad I made that plunge. And then I started figuring out, wait a minute. Do I need to label myself? Am I an alcoholic? Do I have a drinking problem? And I was going on the internet searching stuff as I quit. And I was driving myself crazy.
Yeah.
Tell people I'm an alcoholic. You know, no. I don't need to tell people anything. Tell people I don't drink anymore. And I've made that choice, and that's it. I don't need to get into discussion. So yeah, it feels great. I know, you know, you've had some struggles with it, obviously, but you shared that helped me, that helped inspire me. And now I've mentioned it to other friends and other people that I say that are starting to think about it as well. And for me, abstinence is the way I need to go because that's the way my personality is. Because I know if I take one glass of wine, I'm going to, you know, go back in that.
It'll slowly accelerate again.
But I'll say, okay, I'm allowed to do this. I'm allowed to do that. You start working out the rules in your head, stuff like that. So anyways, that's my, you know, that's my encounter with alcohol. And like I said, I feel great. And I highly recommend it. You know, balance in everything is important. So whatever works for you in balance, I say, you know, stick with it.
Well, and I think that's a great point. And I want to touch on 2 points, right? The idea of balance and how for me personally, I am an unbalanced person in many ways, in the sense of I'm not able to balance alcohol. For me, there's no balance. And there's a couple other things in my life that there's no balance. They just don't belong there, and it can't be there. And so alcohol is one of those things. Like, it's just gone. That's got to be out of here. And so, you know, we also kind of touched on the, oh goodness, it was really, really solid. You had talked about some other people that you had come in contact with and some of the kind of feedback that you got and some of the, I don't know, we'll call it, you know, reflection in the mirror kind of moments for certain people. I'm kind of curious, you know, what your experience was when you started sharing with people, because it sounds like there's been some good that's come of it. Some other people that are pondering.
Yeah, drop it. Supportive. And, you know, there's been some people that some friends that that like to drink that I would say that maybe fall into the same category that I do, that kind of say, you know, if you don't quit all the way, don't worry about it. Don't be so hard on yourself. And obviously, those, some of those people need to look in the mirror, and, you know, and I've given my story and done what I can, but it really, it comes from within, but it's been really positive. The biggest challenge is, you know, getting together with people and social situations where everything seemed to revolve around alcohol. Hey, bring the bourbon, we'll do the bourbon. Hey, come over for Shabbat dinner, we'll bring our, you know, we'll drink our wine together. So I'm going through all these moments now and living them now without alcohol. And at first it was tough, but now it's getting easier and easier. And no label on myself, which I love. You know, labeling is probably one of the worst things that we can all do, not do, and try to avoid, because if we get ourselves into trouble, we start pigeonholing and assigning characteristics to something that might not be true.
So true. So true. I remember I was going to a lot of 12-step groups and stuff as I was working on some of my recovery and just going through counseling and going through a lot of other challenges. And one of the things I didn't like about those recovery groups was it was very problem focused. I am this. I am that. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a this. I'm a that. I'm an addict. I'm this, you know, and like, I don't know. To me, it was just really negative. Like, you know, like, I'd rather focus on like the positives that I am. Right. You know, I'd rather spin this and say, you know, these positives have changed me to the point where I am no longer that thing anymore. Right. And you kind of talked about that struggle of like, how do I define myself? And I battled with that, because looking at it traditionally, if you look at the definition of an alcoholic, typically there's a chemical dependency, right? There's a withdrawal period that you go through when you wean off of alcohol, when you cold turkey with alcohol, if you're an alcoholic, if you are a diagnosed alcoholic. And so for me, I know that that wasn't true. I'd go weeks at a time without drinking alcohol. However, when I picked it up, I was drinking a lot. I would drink a lot. And so what I found was, you know, if I need to define myself, I love the exact same thing that you did. Whereas I define myself as just a non-drinker. I just don't drink anymore. You know, and if I look, and if I have to find some sort of like way to help people understand it, is like, I was more of an alcohol abuser. I did not have a healthy relationship. Anytime I drank too much. And there was no medium. You know, I didn't, you know, I was like the, you know, kind of playing guitar or something, you know, crank it to 11, man. Like that's what I did. There was no cranking it to 3. There was no turning it up to 4. It was just start at 1 and we're going to work our way all the way up to 11. That's the way we're going to do it.
Yeah. Andrew, the one thing I've learned over the last several years is really living in the moment and enjoying every second and looking, you know, living now and moving forward. You can't change the past. You can't dwell on the past. That has happened. It's what are we going to do moving forward? And what do we aspire to do? Because we can aspire and dream and do anything we want. And I think a lot of people get you know, stuck in the past, stuck previous labels, previous, you know, I had all this happen to me. I can't do this. I can't do that. I don't mean to preach here, but it's all tied into everything we're talking about here. It really is.
For sure.
Buy the book. No, I'm just kidding.
Get the book, friends. Get the book. Well, and let's move towards that is the idea of, you know, there's a lot of ways for those listening. There's a lot of ways that you can work through some of your challenges, right? So for Marvin and I, we've decided that, you know, alcohol just doesn't fit. So we gotta dial back. Honestly, I felt better by abstaining. I've never felt as good as when I stopped drinking. And to go back would be like, well, why would I do that? Why would I ever want to feel that way again? Right. I was sad. I was depressed. I was like physically tired. I was like had headaches. Like it was horrible. Yeah. And so like, why would I voluntarily pick that again? Right. And at the same time, whoever's listening, you may have something else that's a challenge. It may not be alcohol. Maybe it's something else that you focus on. Maybe it is something else in your past that keeps coming up. Maybe it is a cycle that you keep getting stuck in. That was another thing that I noticed when I was going through a lot of my internal work was a lot of my life was cyclical. The same things happened again and again, sometimes on a monthly basis, sometimes a couple times a year. It just kept circling back up again. And it wasn't until I could address the root issue that it stopped the cycle. And so I guess for you, Marvin, for those that are maybe stuck in a cycle, for those that are noticing that like their life maybe isn't quite the way that they want, or maybe they're that person where someone shared vulnerably and they just stared back at them, right? What can that person who hasn't gotten in touch with some of those deeper challenges, what can they do right now?
I think it's getting out of your comfort zone. And, you know, we get into ruts, we get into regular routines. And the only way for us to grow as human beings is to not get in a routine. If you get in a routine, you're not thinking about things, you're not growing and thinking about the future and how you're going to change. You're just kind of in autopilot. And the key is to break that autopilot. I say, you know, incorporate some meditation to kind of clear the mind and start taking little actions and doing things differently. That, you know, whether it's you drive to work the same way every day, don't do that. Drive a different way and break that unconscious, repetitive voices in our head and start thinking about what you want to do to change things moving forward. I think that's it. It's clearing the space in your mind and breaking the cyclical things that we're doing in our life. And make little changes to do that. I know it sounds silly. Oh, I'm going to change the way I went to work, or I'm going to change the way I walk the dog. And, you know, now I'm going to go around the block the other. But those things and breaking the cycle allows you time to think about what you want to do and what kind of changes you want to make to really live a happier life.
I love that.
There's all kinds of books out there and things, exercises on what I'm talking about. And this goes down to the brain and how the brain works. The brain is supposed to be put us into a comfortable state. The way it does that is to kind of put us in a routine. And the only way for growth is to break those routines and do it every day. And you'll start making some strides moving forward.
I love that. And you look at the investment in an education, right? And I think that's why so often we wish we could go back and relive things, because it's like, I've wasted so much time because I just didn't know. I just hadn't been taught. I just didn't have that mentor. I just didn't get that breakthrough that I needed. And I wish I could go back and had that breakthrough sooner. And so you can't go back to get sooner to happen, but sooner could be today for those listening, right? Sooner could be today. Get that education. Go get that counselor. Go learn more about yourself. Learn more about your challenges.
Right. And, you know, if you have kids, whether they're going through things or not going through things, I think everybody deserves to go to therapy and do it at a younger age. So you get the tools to be able to deal with things and process things and be able to feel better about yourself and live a happier life and acquire these inner superpowers that you can do anything. So you don't have to have a troubled life, or your kids don't have to be totally depressed, but really start talking to them now. And I think, you know, people read my book that have kids, you'll see kind of what I went through, what I would have went through as a kid approaching therapy and dealing with a therapist for the first time, especially as a teenager. You'll see that unfold in my book as well.
Marvin, can you tell us what the book is, where we can find it?
Yeah, it's called Modern Day Superhero. And really the goal is, we all possess the power. And it's really to inspire young adults to want to get a therapy to acquire inner superpowers to be able to do anything and make it kind of cool and exciting to see a therapist. And it's available online on Amazon. It's also available at Pittsford Plaza, Barnes & Noble. I've got a book signing March 12th. I don't know if this is coming out before then. It's a Sunday between 1 and 3. But definitely Google the book and you'll find a few different ways to purchase it.
Love it. And I'll put that in the show notes too. So those that are listening, you can hop into those show notes and grab a copy of Marvin's book. Marvin, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
And I tell you, I'm going to miss, last time I left, I started missing you and missing the show. I think it's going to happen again. My heart's going to go fonder. We're going to have to do this again.
Boomerang times three, baby. All right. Have a great one, Marvin.
Glad. Great to see you. Thanks again for having me, Andrew.
What's going on, Grow Getters? Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you hit subscribe. This is going to automatically download the newest episodes for you, because let's be honest, you know this is your favorite show. It's also going to help this show get in front of more people. Subscribes are the biggest metric that they use in order to push this in front of a new audience. If you want to do me another huge favor, you could leave me a review. Let me know why you tune in. What's been intriguing for you lately? What have you been learning? In this most recent episode, what was something that stood out for you? Please. Leave that review. And thanks for being on this journey with me. Andrew hopes you have enjoyed this program.